Today, a wave of violence continues across Afghanistan. Taliban insurgents have killed at least 6 Afghan soldiers, and the Canadian embassy warned its citizens to leave for their own safety. This is expected to be a tense month in Afghanistan as President Ashraf Ghani consolidates relationships with Washington and NATO. That after he signed security agreements that will govern the end of the NATO combat mission. The BBC's diplomatic correspondent Jonathan Marcus is covering that NATO meeting now. Jonathan, what does the NATO mission in Afghanistan and the U.S. role in it look like going forward?
Well, it's summed up in the title of that new mission. Obviously, within a few short weeks now, the combat operations will largely end, and there will be a new mission dubbed Resolute Support, the emphasis being very much on helping the Afghan security forces do the job of work themselves. There'll be key assistance, there'll be key training. Of course, American forces will remain in considerable number, about 9,800. And although the overall combat mission will end, there may still be American combat operations. The Americans have made it very clear that they are willing to go into action in a number of circumstances, notably, of course, to defend people involved in the training activities, but also to attack what they call transnational terrorist groups, Al-Qaeda and its ilk, and also to assist the Afghan forces. That's perhaps a slightly broader remit, I think, than many people imagined at the outset.
That's right. And here's how Jens Stoltenberg, NATO Secretary General, described the mission in Afghanistan going forward.
This mission will train, advise and assist Afghan security forces from the 1st of January, after the end of our combat mission.
What is the difficulty right now as NATO and U.S. troops train and advise Afghan security forces? What is still problematic about that?
I think that the difficulty in all these sorts of circumstances is that you don't just create security forces in a vacuum. I mean, in a way, you could make a comparison with the collapse of the American-trained security forces in Iraq. Security forces are a product of a particular society, a particular system of governance, or the lack of governance. You have problems of corruption and so on and so forth. So I think it's all those sorts of issues that raise concerns. And clearly, without a very significant American and NATO presence to stiffen resolve, there must be doubts about how effective those security forces will be. I think we're likely to see a patchwork of rather variegated picture. In some places, they will do well. In others, they may do particularly badly.
Let's talk about another trouble spot that's being addressed at this NATO meeting today. NATO is drawing down in Afghanistan, but the alliance seems to be shifting its focus to Russia and Russia's aggression against Ukraine. Talk about what seems to be a kind of rapid reaction force that NATO is talking about now.
Well, it's kind of struggling to rapidly react in some ways. I think, to be fair, NATO responded reasonably quickly to the initial, what it saw as the initial Russian aggression against Ukraine. Its principal purpose was to reassure really very worried allies on its own eastern flanks, Poland, the Baltic republics, and
which
so
are
on,
extremely worried about possible Russian aggression against them.
Who are extremely worried. They all are countries who were either parts of the Soviet Union or were members of the Warsaw Pact, allies of the Soviet Union. So they would claim they know the Russians very well. So essentially, NATO's role has been one of reassurance, to set up very quickly small-scale military exercises in these countries. There is some modest non-lethal support for the Kiev government, the Ukrainian government. Obviously, NATO governments have generally backed very strongly the broader economic sanctions against Russia. The difficulty now for NATO is to try and establish a rather more medium-term response to Russia. That means having forces that can be rapidly deployed to the alliance's borders. And of course, rapidly deployable forces, even if they're not terribly large, cost a lot of money. And I think that is proving a little troublesome within NATO. Who exactly is going to stump up for the bill and so on? But they are optimistic that they will be able to get an initial force in place next year with a full brigade or so ready to move very quickly the following year by the summit in Warsaw in 2016.
So this is also a assuming that President Putin has designs on Poland, as you said, and the Baltic republics, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, is there any reason, solid reason right now, to believe that he does?
Well, he certainly made some threatening noises. Of course, that's maybe exasperation with the situation that he finds himself in. I think the problem for NATO, in a sense, is to calibrate this correctly, to respond to the understandable concerns of its members, who are very worried by the Russian behaviour, but not to go so far as to actually be, you know, stirring the pot of this potential new mini Cold War that seems to be developing.
That's right, so because if they stir the pot, then the likelihood is, in some minds, that Putin will stir it even more.
Well, absolutely. And then you're just into an escalating cycle, and we really are back into a kind of Cold War situation. But, you know, there is a concern, I think, basically to do enough to reassure allies, to do enough to deter the Russians, but equally not provoke this crisis to a new and more dangerous level.
Jonathan, one more question. How does NATO and how does the United States and its allies within NATO determine what kind of a threat Russian President Vladimir Putin presents right now? Because we know that the U.S. is talking today about new sanctions on Russia if violence is not halted in Ukraine. And there are already U.S. and EU sanctions on Russia's energy sectors and its defense. The ruble, as we know, fell to a new low yesterday, the second worst performing currency in the world. There are thousands of people protesting in Moscow against planned closures of hospitals and layoffs of doctors. Vladimir Putin is not in a good position right now. To what extent is he a threat, and how does the U.S. and how do NATO members determine that?
I think, again, it goes back to this question of calibrating the response. But clearly, the pressure now is very much on Mr. Putin. The Russian narrative has been triumphant at home up until now. The question remains whether that begins to change, given the economic pressures back on the home front in Russia.
Okay, speaking to us from Brussels, where NATO foreign ministers are meeting today, Jonathan Marcus, the BBC's diplomatic correspondent. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.